What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Virgil, the poet Virgil, born 70 BCE, died 19 BCE. What does Virgil have in common? How is he a presence with our founding fathers? That's right. 2,000 years apart, and yet I welcome Robert G. Nadelson. Rob Nadelson is a former constitutional law professor, classics training, now a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute in Denver. Rob, a very good evening to you. Virgil and the Revolution. I love the idea you can put them together. How so? Good evening to you, Rob.
Good evening, and it's an honor to be with you. The founders loved Virgil. I mean, I looked at a website called Founders Online, which collects correspondence by only seven founders, and yet there are nearly 400 references to Virgil in their correspondence. They use Virgil as a source of inspiration, a source of ideas, a source of language. He was very much a presence at the American founding. In fact, I've called him the poet laureate of the American founding.
This is not a man who was spent his life with a sword in his hand. It's not a man you would find at the ramparts of revolution. The presentation made by the scholars and the historians is that he was mild. He lived his life in the countryside, and his temperament was one of a retiring person, shy, we would call. That is not inspiration. So how is it that the founders found him? Was it part of their education?
Well, you're absolutely right that he did not follow the normal career of a Roman statesman. I mean, we think of Julius Caesar winning battles over the Gauls and Cicero winning battles in the Senate. That was not Virgil. Virgil got his fame from being a poet, and he got that fame during his lifetime. He became extremely popular in his lifetime. And you're right, it was part of the founder's education. In those days, if you had any hope of eventually being well-educated, you started studying Latin and the Latin and Greek classics about age 8. They were, along with the Bible, central pillars of the curriculum. And while the founders read other poets and studied statesmen as well, Virgil was one of their very favorites.
So now we have a secret. What in there is revolutionary? I understand there was an agrarian prejudice. I've always come to Virgil thinking this is about farming, which I enjoy a great deal. However, when I read more, I realize that there's a storyline here. Not just one, several, but what themes appeal to our founders?
Well, one I think was the agricultural theme. Just for listeners' information, Virgil produced three major works. And the second work was called the Georgics. It was a poem of over 2,000 words, and it covered agricultural subjects. Virgil's love for the countryside shines through this poem. And there were many founders who also glorified the countryside, probably most famously Thomas Jefferson. And so that aspect of Virgil appealed to them. Virgil's latest and largest work is called the Aeneid. It's about a military hero named Aeneas who flees Troy while it's being burned by the Greeks, wanders around the Mediterranean, and eventually comes to Italy, where he helps to found the people who later found Rome. Well, this idea of nation building, of leaving what was behind because of disasters, and of founding a new nation, I think that also appealed to the American founders as well. In addition, all of Virgil's poems are filled with these wonderfully quotable lines. And sometimes you'll see a founder writing in a letter or making a speech for or against the Constitution, lifting a line from Virgil because he knew that that line could communicate to the others in the room more powerfully than anything he could say in English.
You had me when you explicated the dollar bill on both sides. Do it for us, Rob.
Sure. If you have a dollar bill, take it out and look at the back. And if on the back of the dollar bill, you'll see the Great Seal of the United States. On the right is the front of the Great Seal. On the back is the, on the left is the back of the Great Seal. Now, if you look at the left side, you'll see the Latin words Novus Ordo Seclorum, which means New Order of the Ages. That particular line is an abridgment of a line in Virgil's first great collection of poems, the Eclogues. Then if you look on the seal, you'll see another Latin expression, Anuit Coeptis, which means he has approved our undertakings, meaning that God has approved our undertakings. This is from a prayer in Virgil's Aeneid. Now, if you go to the right side of the back part of the bill, you'll see our motto, E Pluribus Unum, or in English, E Pluribus Unum. That comes from a poem called The Salad, in Latin, Moretum, which Virgil is reputed to have written. We don't really know that he did write it, but we know that during the founder's generation, everybody thought he did. And so that expression comes from a line in this poem, which reads, E Pluribus Unus. You change the unus to unum, and you've got the American national motto. All three of these expressions on the Great Seal of the United States came from or reputed to come from the Roman poet Virgil.
You mentioned Jefferson and Governor Morris. There's so many of the founders here. Was this a secret language between them?
No, not at all. I mean, anyone who was well-educated at that time, who at least among men, studied Latin to such an extent that Latin was was really a second language to them. So there was nothing secret about it. I say men because while some women studied Latin, it was more customary among educated women to study the modern languages like Italian and French. But among men, Latin was commonly known, and you can see this again in their correspondence. There'll be a little line which is unattributed or abridged in some way, and anyone who studied Virgil knows that, gee, that came from Virgil.
The Aeneid is a story. It's a romantic tale taking a bit player in the Iliad and turning him into the hero in a quest for a place to live with refugees, which we can identify any time in the last 2,000 years. I'm struck by the fact that Virgil wanted to use it. I never put those things together, or that the revolutionaries of our founders wanted to see themselves as wandering in the wilderness, seeking Rome. Did they think of themselves? I've always thought it was the New Jerusalem, but did they also think of themselves as the New Rome?
Yeah, there were all kinds of references to Rome or to the creation of Rome as a model for the United States. You can see this particularly in the Constitution crafting process. The upper house of the United States Congress is called the Senate.
Right.
That term comes from the Latin word Senate. The idea of the mixed Constitution was a Roman concept. It was popularized by the Greek historian Polybius and by the great Roman statesman Cicero, this idea of the mixed constitution, it was adopted by our founders. So in many ways, they patterned themselves on Rome. Aeneas is a very interesting character. In the Aeneid, he's sort of the number four hero. He's behind Achilles and Hector and Ajax the Greater. And as you say, he doesn't have a major role. But he becomes a hero in the Aeneid, and he's not a hero like Achilles is, who's kind of a savage guy who just likes to kill people. He is a hero who is dutiful to the gods, dutiful to his parents, dutiful to his responsibilities, always tries to do the right thing, sometimes is prevented from doing the right thing. So in a sense, I think of him as a George Washington kind of hero. Military glory, certainly, but also responsiveness to higher duty.
Professor, we have young people listening to us. Where would you, what would you recommend they begin with? Which of his works?
Well, you've got to really begin by studying Latin.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
Virgil is really a third or more likely a fourth year Latin subject. I would not start with the Georgics. That is particularly difficult. Probably the Eclogues might be a good place to start. They're a series of 10 poems, averaging about 83 lines each. And as you read them, you will recognize aspects of our own culture that you've never really thought much about. So that's where I would recommend starting. But you're not going to be able to really get into it until you've got a few years Latin under your belt.
Rob Nadelson, publishing for the Civitas Outlook at Civitas Institute of the University of Texas. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.